We're on the telephone with the Director of Agricultural Programs for the Isaac Walton League of America, Brad Redland. And of course, the Isaac Walton League has been very concerned with what appears to be some pretty significant cuts coming in conservation funding for farmlands, whether it be in the next farm bill or as the super committee in Washington looks at ways to reduce the federal deficit. Well, Brad, let's get an update from you on that, and what do you think is happening in Washington right now, and how it's going to affect conservation funding?
Well, there's certainly a flurry of activity in Washington right now, and outside of Washington in terms of the agriculture community trying to get out ahead of cuts that may be coming. I think particularly people are focused right now on the super committee. There's much concern about essentially, obviously, what kind of cuts are going to come down. I think agriculture has been pretty unanimous in saying that we anticipate some cuts. We expect some cuts. We just want them to certainly be fair and commensurate with what's happening across the rest of the federal budget. But people are also concerned that the super committee might start dabbling in actually rewriting some policies. And I think that's got people, engaged in a very early way in the Sorrento Farm Bill and actually putting out proposals in specific terms, whether they be commodity program, Title I Farm Bill rewrite proposals you're seeing from soybeans and corn growers and Cotton Council and others, or you're seeing coalitions of folks getting together and commenting in support of conservation. It's something that we've been participating in, certainly, that we want to see the funding that decisions that are made be made in a responsible way that really protect conservation for really the health and viability and the soil productivity of our lands and the cleanliness of the water, but certainly also for the habitat benefits for wildlife, all of those things that producers know better than anyone that conservation achieves. And we just feel that the voice is out there and just needs to be certainly recognized by the people in those positions, in the super committee, of course, and obviously also in the agricultural committees.
Well, it sure appears that right or wrong, the conservation is a main target here when we start talking about cuts, and I'm wondering, you know, what's your maybe best case scenario and maybe worst case scenario for conservation funding going forward here?
Well, I think that conservation has unfortunately had a history of being essentially the first stop for agricultural cuts. It really is an unfortunate history, and you can look back and say since the passage of the 2002 Farm Bill, two Farm Bills ago, every subsequent year, the annual appropriations process has cut conservation. It's the one arena of Farm Bill policies that has had the distinction, the unfortunate distinction of seeing that its funding cut every year for the last two Farm Bills. So that's a record no one wants to have, but conservation has it. And it should also be telling, I think, to the people in positions of determining the funding for agricultural policies that recognize that conservation has certainly given up funding in the past, and that always in the environment of a lot more people, a lot more applications in that are ever being able to be funded as it is. So it's the demand is clearly there. As to what's going to happen, I think we'll probably see some level of cuts. I think we're probably going to see some level of consolidation of programs across the suite of programs that currently exist. I think that speaking for the Isaac Walton League, we believe that there are efficiencies that certainly can be achieved in the conservation program delivery and application, and I think that we want to work closely with folks to really achieve those efficiencies. If there's a core principle that we bring to the consolidation discussion of conservation programs, I think that it's essentially that the unique and the specific purposes of a given program must really be maintained. If you have a program like the Wetlands Reserve Program, who's facing a Farm Bill reauthorization with $0 in its budget, in its baseline, we'll understand that we have to find new ways to get that program stood back up again. It's vital that it is stood back up again, but if there's, you know, combinations of doing that, we don't care what kind of name necessarily anyone places on it, but if we have these viable opportunities that are in such great demand from landowners out there, agriculture producers, to restore wetlands. Just make sure that core capacity is there, that there is a program that provides the opportunity for producers to restore wetlands where they want to. It's the essence of these voluntary programs that they provide the unique services each one of them do. And like I say, you can kind of mix the packaging around and it won't upset us, but we want to make sure that they're available to folks. And even in the other aspect of conservation is that there's some conservation that doesn't cost us anything, and that certainly is when we talk about the conservation compliance mechanism. This is the soil erosion plans and the wetland mitigation requirements if you're converting wetlands. And we think that those are just particularly suited to the current times right now in a budget environment that where there is no money, and we need to protect really the soil and water quality out there for the sustainability of the agriculture producers as well as all of the natural resources. So we think that making sure the conservation compliance is recognized for the role it can serve can be examined for perhaps improvements in how and different areas it can reach into. But primarily and most basically is that with the federal crop insurance subsidies now becoming the single biggest form of support, public support to agriculture of any of the forms of support, any other subsidies that exist out there, the rationale for conservation compliance applying to public tax dollars going to producers needs to be reattached to crop insurance as it originally was when compliance was first introduced. So we think that that's a conservation act that can take place. It's not going to cost anything. And in fact, in the worst case scenario, should we actually see producers violate their compliance expectations, then we're actually saving the U.S. Treasury money. So it's something that we're certainly wanting to make very clear to Congress, and Congress is certainly hearing that message.
Yeah, I know with the concerns about direct payments going away that there's, and it seems to be kind of split in the agricultural community, whether conservation compliance should apply to crop insurance or not.
It's certainly a discussion point, and it should be, and I'm glad to see that it is. It's like I say, going to be a critical element of our current environment in this budget deficit environment and challenges for funding, obviously, anything in agriculture and certainly agriculture conservation. We think that the compliance provisions that exist, just, you know, the wetlands conservation or swamp buster and the highly erodible land requirements for these soil plans are proven successes. They've documented, achieved great things for conservation, for protecting the soil, and ultimately protecting the productivity of our agricultural lands. That we just need to kind of take the bull by the horns here and apply the conservation provisions the way they originally were proposed and intended to be, and that was across the specter of all payments that essentially agriculture producers receive from taxpayers. That's currently and should continue, obviously, to include any conservation payment. Like you said, it's always been tied to direct payments and all other form of subsidies, marketing, loan gains, etc. So I think that with crop insurance, which has really changed since 1996 when the special exemption was given to crop insurance to not be held to compliance, crop insurance has clearly changed a great deal and has really become dominant. I mean, it's grown fourfold over in the last 10 years, as a matter of fact. So it's a program right now that works. It's a program that the Isaac Walton League actually supports as an ideal model for a safety net. That's what insurance does. It's what it should be as a safety net. So we're supportive of it, but we recognize that the purpose of conservation compliance is to apply to just such public support as what crop insurance is right now. So we think that it's what ag and conservation and ultimately Congress and the administration must all embrace.
And what about the Conservation Reserve Program? Looks like there'll be a lot of pressure to cut that down quite a bit.
It's certainly the case that there's pressure on it. We've seen discussions and proposals out there already, certainly for cuts. It's a program that can definitely be, in the eyes of the Iowa Walton League, examined and altered and developed and optimized, I guess would be the word I'd use. So, we can talk about different systems of getting more grazing into the program, that sort of thing. When it comes to the total acres enrolled, we'd really like to leave that up to the land owners and producers out there to kind of determine the conservation reserve programs, the size that they want. And I remain convinced that it is a popular program. It continues to be a popular program. A 10-year, speaking from as a Montana farm kid myself, I know a 10-year guaranteed contract is a nice thing to have in agriculture, regardless of what the grain prices might be. So it's not something that I think people are just going to, on a really massive scale, just turn their back on. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, has it been falling in enrollment? Yes, it has. There's no really denying that. But the challenge there is to make sure that as enrollment over a particular cycle like we may be in right now, a price cycle we may be in right now that may be driving some people to not enroll in the program. If we start lowering the statutory cap on things in response to a current cycle, we don't want to trap ourselves in an inability to actually meet the demand for the program that may be just right around the corner for all we know. Accompanying that challenge is when you do have an unused portion of the program or an unused aspect of it, it can become a budgetary issue where there's baseline dollars that may be lost if a program finds itself being undersubscribed, and those dollars kind of go away into the ether that could potentially be captured to fund other conservation programs. So it becomes a really involved process. I suspect my confusing comments are demonstrating, but it's certainly a big topic of discussion in a program that really has anchored conservation in this nation for decades, and will certainly need to be maintained and continued, but we're certainly talking about ways to optimize it.